House Education Subcommittee on Education Innovation, Thursday, February 1, 2007.
I'm going to open the House Committee Education hearing for the Subcommittee on Education Innovation. Today is February 1st. She's ready.
Yeah, I'm going to bring up the sign-in
sheet. Oh, sign-in sheet. Okay. Today, we did have two bills originally posted for today, but we did a change in the agenda. And so today we'll be doing a public hearing on House Bill 2048. And I think I'll go ahead and open that public hearing before, and then Representative Dahlem wanted to, and we'll hear the bill summary, and then Representative Dahlem wanted to give a brief overview of some things too. So with that, I'm going to open the public hearing on House Bill 2048. And Rick Rakobian, if you'd give us a little bit of background.
Thank you, Chair. House Bill 2048 basically does one thing with several different areas of the assessment process in education in Oregon. It basically allows school districts and public charter schools, in lieu of the statewide assessment system, to implement an alternate system in math, science, and English if this alternate system meets certain criteria, and those are enumerated in the bill. And then it goes ahead and allows students in private alternate education programs to also use the alternate assessment program, the superintendent of public instructions to use the alternate assessments, and then when the Oregon report card is conducted, that will also be taken into consideration with all the alternate assessments. Currently, the Department of Education, Oregon Department of Education, has a set statewide system in place for math, science, English, history, economics and civics and geography that these districts, school districts and public schools must adhere to. Some states are also exploring using the modified version of the ACT and College Board, the SAT and AP test, for the No Child Left Behind testing requirements, and they're discussing possible approval by the Department of Education, the U.S. Department of Education.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Rakobian. Representative Dahlem, do you want to kind of give a little overview and your thoughts? This is Representative Dahlem's bill, and I want to give him the respectful consideration he deserves.
Thank you very much, Chair Kump. Where we started, or as we heard presentation from ACT, SAT, and the state testing people, I developed a list of things that is a little more extensive than what is listed in the bill. Can your testing system do these things? And so I'm just going to review that so that all of us understand them. And I told Chair Kump, I'll look around the room, and I see SAT people here, but no ACT people. And I see the state testing representative that could testify to that. But if I see you shaking your head violently, then I'm going to change my check mark or ask them why I'm having some misconceptions.
Did you want them to come to the
I'll just read them. Well, I think I took a scorecard. I asked if we could predict probability of college success. And SAT... ACT both said yes, the state isn't designed for that. Can we do program evaluation? And the genesis of that is we at the state level want to be able to compare one school district to another, and No Child Left Behind mandates that we compare student progress, and all three said that. Can we provide the appropriate No Child Left Behind information? And the answer was all three could do that. Provide college placement, and the state said no, the other two said yes. Do you have a test in science? The state is working on one. Math, all three said, and the other two, the kind of science test that I was looking for, there was some question. And I believe both those testing agencies are working on that, but at this point in time, there was a question. Math, all can test that. Social studies, all can test that. Grammar and literature, all three can test that. Provide career development information. The state instrument, no. The other two, yes. measure state standards? All three said yes. Norm nationally, the answer for the state was no, the other two was yes. Provide diagnostics, the state was a question mark, the other two were yes, and then we explored that to some extent. And that covers my list, Madam Chair, and that's how we got into the position we're in.
Further clarification, if you don't mind, Representative Dahlen, before we actually take testimony here today, and that is, and I certainly want to have anybody, we have educators and administrators here and all kinds of folks, but if there's any feedback at any time, I mean, about what could our system do better, or if we've had teachers here, and they're all busy teaching, most of them, unless they're publicly elected, but, you know, what are the results of or the impact of the current testing system in our schools? Is it working? Is there something we can do better? Do we need to give it more time? You know, those are all questions that are kind of out there. And, you know, and we're going to bring up Doug Koski first. And I don't know, Doug, what your testimony is going to be, but maybe you could give us even a little bit of history, how our state testing, how we've gotten where we are. And also, Doug, or anybody that's testifying today, what's the difference between norm-referenced assessments and criterion-based assessments? Because different tests do different things. And so according to the laws for No Child Left Behind, and particularly for our federal statutes, what do we need to be happening in our schools? Because we don't want to have a conflict of outcomes. Our state needs to be on the same path as other states. So any questions what we're kind of trying to accomplish here today? Okay. Well, Doug, if you'd approach the table and enlighten us.
Thank you, Chair Kopp, members of the committee. For your record, my name is Doug Koski. I'm the Assistant Superintendent of Assessment and Information Services. I have prepared some written testimony, and I will basically talk from that and give you an overview of the history of the assessment system. I didn't prepare that, but I probably
right.
could wing it a bit.
Yeah, just a little bit.
The history of the assessment system was it started in the early 80s as a sampling, much like the NAEP, where we did random samplings of kids throughout the state.
Doug, many people won't know what the NAEP is.
Oh, I'm sorry. The NAEP is the National Assessment of Education Progress. So that's a federally mandated test that is, the purpose of it is to test how states are doing in certain content areas. And they do that by establishing a set of national standards and an assessment system to measure those standards and randomly assess kids in every state, do a sampling, if you will, and the purpose of it is to provide some type of measurement at a state level to see how kids are doing from state to state based on their national standards. The Oregon system was designed in the early days, as I was saying, much along those lines. And in the early 90s, we moved to a more of a testing every child mode. And in 1996, we established our first set of cut scores in terms of our scale. We are on a scale for each content area and by grade level. And we recently went through that process last December and reestablished our scale scores so that each...
I'm going to stop you there. Okay, I know what a cut score is. Do you want to give an example for people that really...
Sure, sure. Let's say, for example, our scale is from 200 to, or 180 to 250. What that scale is basically a yardstick of what a child knows at any point in time to determine where they are at on a in a particular grade level and content area. And the score starts at the, or the scale starts in the third grade and it ends in the 10th grade. So the continuum is the scale increases over time for each of those grade levels and content areas.
And how much does the scale change from grade level to grade level, approximately?
It's about, what, 3 to 6 points per grade.
Sometimes 6 or 7.
Yeah.
As much, but
yeah,
usually closer to 4 or 5.
Yep, exactly.
Well, and if I can clarify how you use a cut score, if you're identifying a talented and gifted student on that example where you went from, what, 150 to 260?
250 or whatever.
Yeah, anyway, the cut score is going to be like 245 for being talented and gifted. So each you know, marker on the yardstick has different implications depending upon what the purpose is for the diagnostic assessment.
That is correct, Chair Kahn. Okay. And as if you may recall, when Tony Alpert was here the last time, he described the process a bit. And as we test kids, there's also this standard error of measurement around each score. So that kind of gives us a little leeway either way, plus or minus, whether the kids are, it's the buffer zone, if you will. So in, over time we have developed our assessments. We started out in grades 3, 5, 8, and 10. And most recently we've had to go through grades 3 through 8 due to federal requirements and grade 10. So we're testing each grade level. And we're testing in math and reading at those levels. And we also test in writing at grades 4, 7, and 10. In addition to those tests, just for your reference, we also do a test of English language proficiency. We refer to it as the ELPA, and it is a separate exam that we administer, and then we provide exams in Spanish and Russian, and we also provide enhanced assessments for the children with disabilities. But I'm here to talk primarily about the TESA and the writing, so the standard math, reading, writing, grades 3 through 8 and 10. Does that kind of give you the background that you need to go forward?
I think so. Are there any questions for Mr. Kosky at this point? Thank you. Good.
So with respect to House Bill 2048, there's several districts using this assessment, and they're very pleased with it. They've come to the state board and testified on its, on the ACT and the SAT behalf, College Board products and ACT. So it's something that, you know, I'm not going to sit here and say that theirs is not a good product and ours is a great product. Absolutely not. But what I do want to call your attention to is the way the bill is written would put us in violation of No Child Left Behind. And the reason for that is, the reason for that statement is that it would require us to do some alignment studies and some various types of technical studies. When I refer to an alignment study, other states such as Maine and Michigan have had to look at the content standards. Our tests are built on content standards. Each state is mandated to create their own set of content standards. And as you write the items to support the test, they're aligned to those content items, those content standards. And we have to perform alignment studies to determine that we are indeed accurately measuring those content standards, the breadth and depth appropriately of those content standards to hold schools and districts accountable. We're going through a number of studies currently to get our state assessment system approved, and by the end of the year we expect to be fully approved with the U.S. Department of Education along those areas. So when I talk about it, that's one of the types of technical adequacy studies. The other is whenever content standards are changed, you need to go through and revisit your cut scores. That's the activity we most recently did, to review our standards, review the cut scores, and make sure we were on track. And as a side note for your information, the cut scores were, they came up about 3 points on the bottom end through this latest process and dropped about 3 points on the top end, and there was a smoothing study or impact that was applied to those scores. Those scores have not yet been adopted by the State Board. State Board got their first glimpse of them last month, and they're scheduled to be adopted in the March hearing, in a March hearing at the State Board of Education. So that's kind of the impact. The recommendation that I have for this bill is to take a look at what other states are doing and learn from their process. Illinois, Colorado, Michigan, Kentucky, and Maine are all doing this type of thing. A number of states are looking at it, and they have multiple purposes for these tests. One is to test the accountability, to do the accountability, check the accountability box. Another purpose is to help inform instruction, provide good informative information back to classrooms and counselors. And a third is to create an exit exam or college placement, college entrance exam. College entrance and exit are two separate things, but those are different purposes that different states have placed on their tests. And typically, from what I understand, most states are having to augment some portion of their assessment in order to come into compliance with No Child Left Behind. So that ends my testimony, and I'd be happy to entertain questions.
Thank you. Thank you very much. It helps a lot. Representative Dahl?
Doug, you've said that some states are having to augment their present state program. I think one of those is Maine. But when they do that augmentation, then do the outside vendors come into line?
Chair Comp, Representative Dahlem, external vendors, typically the way that's done is through a third-party independent analysis. So let's say College Board was the vendor of choice, which it is in this case in Maine. The feds would not allow College Board to come in and say, here's the alignment study, and hand it to them as evidence that they have a technically adequate system. They would require a third-party vendor to come in and do that work.
And follow up.
Yes, go right ahead.
Are they doing that with the state education agency, or are they contracting for that work?
Chair Comp, Representative Dahlem, I'm not certain whose role and responsibility it is in that case. Typically, the role for the hiring and the payment of the independent analysis would be the responsibility of the state.
Sure. Thank you.
Representative Roebling?
Thank you, Chair. The question that I have is, do we know approximately how much we're charging, it's costing us per child for the TESA, the exams?
Chair Comp, Representative Roebling, I did an analysis during the previous legislative session which indicated we're paying about $13.70 per writing exam and about $6.40 per TESA exam. That number includes multiple other types of tests.
Right.
I am preparing that analysis for the Ways and Means presentation in a couple of weeks, so I'm going to have a more detailed analysis of the cost. But I could say, conservatively, if you look at the writing and the multiple choice, it's about $23, $24 a test per child to be tested.
Representative Buckley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Scotsky, in previous testimony, and please refresh my memory, I believe there are some districts in the state currently using the ACT, for instance. How does that match in with the state as a whole? What is that process for a district?
Sure. Chair Comp, Representative Buckley, currently there's five or six districts, primarily in the Washington County area,
right,
that are using the ACT. They're using that in addition to the statewide assessment. So the kids are being tested on our assessment as well as the ACT, and we currently do not allow those results for accountability purposes.
Thank you.
Just to follow up with a clarification, so Beaverton School District is using the ACT for helping career development, or or can you, do you have any knowledge of why they're doing it?
Chair Comp, I can only refer to the testimony that I've heard from from some of the users of the system, and primarily was hitting on many of the things that Representative Dahlem was talking about, using it to inform instruction and counseling and those type of things.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions from the committee? Thank you, Doug. As our next presentation, we have a panel of three people. We have Mr. P.K. Schwartz, Stephen Duke, and Nick Nelson from North Wasco County School District. We want to welcome you. And
courtesies, Madam Chair.
Pardon me?
Courtesies.
Actually, I'm going to pass the gavel around. I need to go testify in the committee. I apologize. But I'm going to let Representative Roebland do the courtesies and then and introduce our guests.
Did you want to introduce them? Oh.
No, I would like to introduce our guests. I'm very pleased that a delegation from the Dalles Watonka High School, and notice I said the Dalles Watonka High School, P.K. Schwartz is the one and only board chairman they've ever had. I think we have the one and only principal that the high school has ever had, and vice. I think you got 4 out of 5 years?
Somewhere along there.
So we were blessed in our community with the opportunity to create a brand new high school. That took a lot of work, a lot of courage, a lot of effort, and PK has been on the board from the very beginning, and all of these gentlemen have played a big hand that our high school and our whole school system is better than it was, and a lot of that credit goes to these people and a lot of other people in the Dalles. I'm very proud of our school system, and I'm very proud to be associated with these people.
Thank you, Representative Dahlem. The floor is yours, and I don't know which order you want, but please identify yourself before you speak.
Well, let me start. I'm Phil K. Schwartz from the Dalles, and by way of background that Mr. Dahlem left, number one, I am not the chair anymore of that august body that is now Dave Jones. I was chair for 2 years. I am not an educator. My experience with all of this goes back some time, however. I spent 8 years on the board of the old District 12 in the Dalles in the 1980s. I've been 4 years as a board member of Columbia Gorge Community College at one point, and then as Representative Dahlem said, when we formed District 21, I was elected to the board then. So I'm just finishing my fourth year and hopefully final year on the District 21 board. My concern over the whole subject of testing comes down into two major fields. One is the kind of test that you want to have given to a graduating senior to show, yes, indeed, he has learned X amount of material, or certain criteria of material that is put forth by the state. And the other side of testing that I am concerned about is the ongoing testing of students as they progress through the system, sort of as the diagnostic kind of test to show where a student is beginning to fall short in reading ability or in math ability, something of that nature, and can guide us in what kind of corrective action has to be taken. From the point of view of the board level, I'm concerned about being able to rate our school district versus other school districts, both here in Oregon and across the nation. And are we indeed doing the job that we are supposed to be doing and that our public expects of us to be doing and to accomplish? So that's a major element of the testing that I see different from the diagnostic. I keep borrowing a phrase that I heard at one of the school board conferences, and I passed on to Representative Dahlem, that it's the difference between a physical exam and an autopsy. And you're two different goals, and I don't want to see those two goals lost in all this argument over what kind of test. I'm also concerned on this bill because not one size fits all districts, and it's very easy to write a test, presumably for a school district of 100 kids, and it's much more difficult to write one of a school district of 100,000 kids, and the same test isn't going to match both sides. So we do need some flexibility in that, and I do see in this bill the ability to have some flexibility for the school boards to look at the tests and the type of tests and the quality of tests that will answer our needs as well as the public's needs. And that's basically it. Other than that, I would rely more, as I always have to, on the educators in the system, and in this case, Mr. Duke, who's the principal of the Dalles Watonga High School, and believe me, it took us hours of testimony to arrive at that name. And then Mr. Nelson Aubrey, the assistant principal there. So.
Yes.
Be sure to introduce yourself as well.
I'm Stephen Duke.
Thank you.
I basically support the idea of this bill if it can do what it says it does. When I first heard that the idea was to create an instrument that could norm reference and criterion reference at the same time, I became a bit concerned. But if the creators of this can truly give us that, then I am basically I would agree that it's a useful instrument. I have one codicil, and that is that we are entering a really interesting age, where testing is, in the way we do it right now, is becoming rapidly very redundant. I don't know if any of you have any concept what it's like trying to maintain security in an SAT testing environment, or even a TESA testing environment, but it's difficult, and it's going to get worse. When I can have in my watch an instrument that can project an image, allow me to type, be a cell phone, and everything else, you better believe that paper and pencil, or even computer tests, are going to become redundant, and we are probably going to have to fall back on, you show me how to do this, which of course is going to be your problem when you're developing a science test, which eventually would have to be created as part of this, I believe, based on what I think the U.S. Department of Education is going to expect. So this bill needs to be flexible enough to allow us to change with the times, and I'm not just talking after 5 years. I think it's going to be sooner than that. And I loved the way Chair Kahn opened up Pandora's box when she said, what did she say? we could bring up any sort of thing. So while I'm here, I have a couple things to say. Why aren't we testing grade 9s? Why do we stop at grade 10 even if a student has not met in reading, writing, and math? Why aren't we insisting school districts keep going through grade 12? Why isn't that an exit requirement in our state? And, I mean, that's just the student who we would like to be able to read, write, and do a basic arithmetic. Why aren't we testing grade 12 students and our achievement as high schools at grade 12? I know the word exit exam is sort of a dirty word, and in a sense, I mean, in our school district, a lot of those students take SATs, and we are an SAT testing center, which we're very lucky to be. But I really think that in your vision of testing in the state of Oregon for the next 20 years, you need to really think about, we need to really think about that, because I really want to know how well we're doing with grade 12 students. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for the opportunity.
My name is Nick Nelson, and I am the vice principal at the Dalles Watonga High School. This is my second year. I was a vice principal at the Dalles Middle School for four, 4 years prior to this. At the middle school, we piloted the TESA testing regime. We started off with math, and we started off with reading. And we worked out and through the bugs and the difficulties that were associated with that. Now our entire district has gone over to the testing environment with TESA, with the exception of the writing assessment. I think that my question is, we have spent, as teachers and as administrators, countless hours working on the alignment of curriculum to the state content standards. Staff have burdened themselves to try and get the alignment as closely aligned to the performance standard, which is the testing, as possible, so that we can get an accurate set of data, because what we're teaching should match up with what's being assessed. Okay. Criterion reference testing measures content standards, the student's ability to demonstrate skill and understanding with those content standards. That's criterion reference testing. You've probably heard this testimony before, but norm reference testing is more like a sorting procedure. It'll sort those that are winners and sort those out that are losers. It's on based on the bell curve. It will give us information as far as who will be likely to succeed at the college level. Criterion reference testing gives us an accurate, or fairly accurate, account of what's actually going on in the classroom and helps us make some diagnostic moves as far as our program of instruction. Having said that, there's another element that I'd like to bring forth, and that is our work samples. I think that our work samples are a very valid way of... Okay. Criterion reference testing measures content standards, the student's ability to demonstrate skill and understanding with those content standards. That's criterion reference testing. You've probably heard this testimony before, but norm reference testing is more like a sorting procedure. It'll sort those that are winners and sort those out that are losers. It's on based on the bell curve. It will give us information as far as who will be likely to succeed at the college level. Criterion reference testing gives us an accurate, or fairly accurate, account of what's actually going on in the classroom and helps us make some diagnostic moves as far as our program of instruction. Having said that, there's another element that I'd like to bring forth, and that is our work samples. I think that our work samples are a very valid way of determining a student's level of achievement. And I'm not sure, I'm hoping that we don't lose that focus with work samples. Right now we have a certain number of work samples that are assigned to kids who enter the ninth grade, and they are scored on a state rubric system. And those work samples can be feathered into or tied into or have been tied into the SIMP. However, with the new graduation requirements that were the state is now mandating towards graduating seniors this year in 2007, those work samples can be also utilized by the students to provide evidence and supporting claims of meeting the new content or the career-related learning standards. As an example, if I do a writing sample for my English class, I not only can use that toward my SIM, but I can also use that as evidence to support the career-related learning standard of communication. So I hope that we don't lose the focus in this with regard to the work samples. The other thing that I would like to talk briefly about is the amount of time that we're spending currently doing testing. And I was talking with PK down the highway this morning, and people can throw out numbers to you, and those numbers can be manipulated whichever way a person wants. However, if I'm a science teacher, I'll just give you a scenario. If I'm a science teacher and I'm at the high school level, and I've got one class of 10th grade students, and those kids have to be tested. I've got them for 18 weeks, one semester. Okay, it'll take me probably 2 days to get through my that one class and test the testing, which is great. Okay, they also get a second shot if they don't meet the first cut score. So there's another 2 days. Okay, and this can continue to be multiplied out if I have a second class of sophomores that I'm teaching in terms of testing days that are devoted to assessment. And then if we multiply that by, let's say, 4, 5, 6, 8 teachers, you can see how much time the building is being, the resources of the building are devoted to assessment. So I'm, you know, this, we run on a semestered calendar. We have kids for 18 weeks. We need to get those kids assessed, or we have to have them assessed when they have that instruction. We may not, we could get those kids after they've gone through the semester if they haven't met the first opportunity or the second opportunity. We could call them out of another class. They no longer, unless they have science, they may have a professional technical class. We may have to call those out of the classroom to get them a third opportunity to see if they can meet. And I just want you to keep in mind that whichever assessment package is pursued, that there's a time factor involved with that too. And that anytime you're testing, you're taking time out of instruction.
So questions? Yes,
Representative.
Thank you, Representative Roman. Thank you all three for making the trip and being here to help us become informed on the assessment process. Mr. Nelson, maybe I could just ask you, can I summarize what you've been saying and to see if I have it correct? You feel like we have been making progress in terms of saying what the standards are and working the curriculum to address those with your faculty. Do you see a need for a major change at this point? Do you want to open Pandora's box as well and proclaim? Just, I'd like to hear your response on that.
Representative Buckley, I think choice, for the most part, is always good. But the choice has to be weighed in terms of what are the spin-offs of that, especially in times and resource. I think that currently, if we do go through and follow through with a norm reference test, it's not going to, unless there is some direct correlation to our current state standards, you know, I would say that a norm reference test is good for those kids who are going to progress on to a four-year college degree. I guess my question is there substantiated evidence that a norm reference test can supplement our content standards in terms of assessing? Currently, I think what we have right now in TESA does that. There's been a lot of work in trying to get that aligned. And not only by ODE, but also in the field with our staff. And most have bought on board now that content standards is where it's at. The instruction of content standards is where it's at. And if we switch to a criterion or to a norm referenced, you know, my main concern is there a correlation between what that will measure and what the content standards are for the state? Does that make sense?
That's excellent. Okay. That's what I wanted to find out. Thank you.
Representative Dolan. I'd like to follow up on Peter's question. So if the SAT and the ACT people, which is two we're talking about right now, can guarantee that they can accomplish that, then you would support a choice for districts. If they can guarantee they can meet the criteria you've outlined, then you would support a choice for district?
I would feel more comfortable.
Thank you.
That's a dodge.
That's a political answer. Good. All right.
Other questions from members on the committee? Seeing none.
Just one comment on you made, what you made about security of testing. I find it to be fascinating. My son took the SAT a couple of years ago, and it was in a big room, it was in a big gym. So you're kind of referring to the idea that in a test with 200 students in the room, or whatever it was for the SAT that he took, that you're actually concerned that there will be the ability to have the test on your watch with the answers on it, et cetera?
Well, you know, I mean, or somebody else coaching you or whatever. On my belt, I've got three cell phones. One that takes beautiful pictures, you know.
Right.
And it'd be easy to transmit those to another cell phone. It's very easy. Kids are very quick.
Yes. That's understandable.
But the point is that we need to do what we've been told to do a long time ago by educational theorists, which is to start testing kids intelligently. Paper and pencil really doesn't tell you what they know. I have too many kids who can't read who actually manage to get quite a long way in the TESA.
Gotcha. Thank you very much.
Yeah, speaking as one who was a high school principal, kids figure out ways to transfer information to each other, even before they had all the technology that they have today. And so they will continue to work on those issues. And I agree, you know, Edward Deming, who many people know and worked on systems, basically said if you really want to know what people know, ask them. And they will tell you, and then you know that they know it. And I think sometimes we get very convoluted in our ways of trying to discover what we want to know. And had we just asked, we probably would have found out from that person exactly what they know. Show me that you can read. You know, the things that we're doing today with smart readers and others, we find out that they can actually read because they do it. So I think we need to be careful about how we go about testing people and how we gather information and what that information really tells us about things. So,
if I may, I'd like to again emphasize to keep in mind the two main goals of testing. What are we after with the testing?
I agree 100%. I want to say I really do appreciate you coming here and spending some time with us. And Representative Dalton.
I think what we're wrestling with is just that. Testing is high stakes, and you have three educators on this board, and we know that we're going to have to provide test scores to show that this class has improved. Our school district is worthy, and our state meets national standards. At no time in that statement did I reference what the kids know. And I think that's what we're trying to dig out on this committee is what is the best way to serve the children of our districts. And it may be TESA in some districts. It may be the SAT in others or the ACT in others. And that's what we're wrestling with, is the best way to provide the best instrument that will get the politicians what we need, but we'll also get the educators what they want. And I think that's what we've been wrestling with.
Yeah, and I think the biggest thing nationally that we have been wrestling with is exactly at your point. You know, for what purpose do we want the testing done, and what does it serve? And there are many different answers to that question. As Representative Dolan just said, it includes people wanting to know that we're doing a job. But at the essence of it, for those of us up here who are educators, it is what have we imparted into those children? What skills have we given them to help them be successful learners in the future and to be successful contributors to our society? And we rarely get at that answer with the tests that we're doing right now. So figuring those things out is a big job. Any other questions? It was nice of you to give us the opportunity to give us our wisdom, right, John?
I appreciate the opportunity to comment.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Thank you very much. We have no one else signed up for testimony, but if there are people who would like to, we'd love to have them come forward. This is their time. Be sure and make sure that you address who you are and so on to the... Yeah. And you may have to spell your name for us, depending.
Yes. Yeah. My name is Francis Charbonnier, C-H-A-R-B-O-N-N-I-E-R. Okay. And I've been on the McMinnville School Board for close to 3 decades. I'm on the OSBA Board. I'm also a commissioner on PSPC. And I've attended every meeting of the State Board this last year as they work on high school reform, which involves questions relating to content standards and assessments, as well as performance standards. And so I've given a lot of thought to this matter, and I thought I would like to present observations from the standpoint of a board member, a school board member. And I will say that I have one overriding goal, being a board chair, and that is to achieve excellence in education. And by excellence, I mean that every student will be able to achieve at the highest, at his full individual potential. I think that is the most important thing. We need to have far more students who not only meet the standard, but exceed the standard and score at advance in international comparisons. And frankly, we don't score well at this time. So on this matter, you know, with the adoption of the Oregon Education Act for the 21st century, Oregon developed a standards-based education system. And we have three standards. We have the content standards, which define what must be learned at every grade in every subject. Then we have assessments, which measure whether the students have learned what they're supposed to learn. And then we have performance standards and cut scores, which determine whether they have learned enough, you know, to be acceptable. Okay. And so this is the system that we have. And the Oregon Department of Education, primarily with Doug Kosky, has done a remarkable job. And not just him, you know, a number of people, Pat Burke, Tony Alpert, and others, have done a great job of developing thorough, comprehensive content standards. And if you look at the content standards in a current version, 2006, it's about, 70 pages or 80 pages. It's a very voluminous and very comprehensive document. One criticism that has been made to it is that in every subject, the content standards are a mile wide and an inch deep. And that puts us at a disadvantage in comparison with other countries where the content standards are more focused, and therefore where students are able to put more time on the things that are going to be tested. Okay. Then they have, of course, realized that having the content standards, they have to have assessments, and they worked very hard to provide assessment with considerable input, you know, from educators and from the general public for just 4 grades and 2 subject matters at the beginning. There was language, arts, and math, and at 3rd, 5th, 8th, and 10th grade. And so they had a lot of experience with that. And so when NCLB came and said, from now on, every state has to have content standards, they have to have assessments, the assessments have to be aligned with the content standards, then Oregon was given a pass, at least initially, you know, saying your content standards are good, your assessment standards are good at those 4 grades. But then they said you need to have testing at more grades, and so they added the 4th, 5th, 7th, 8th, 7th, and 9th. So that now we have assessments at 8 grades instead of 4 initially. And then recently they said, well, you've made some changes in your content standards. You haven't changed your assessment or your performance standards and cut scores. Therefore, you have to do that. This is what we're doing under a lot of pressure. This will be done by the end of the year. But the thing that's important is that our assessments and our performance standards and cut scores have been approved or will be fully approved by the end of the year for this, the assessments that we're required to do by NCLB. That's very important. Because when you look at doing something else, now every district has to wrestle, and every state, with the fact that NCLB puts enormous constraints on the ability of the districts to follow the programs that they want. And you have to comply with the NCAB requirements, regardless of what they are. You have no choice. And so if we were going to go to a different assessment system, NCAB would require that this be done with considerable input from the general public and from educators, and then that the alignment would be really studied. And therefore, that means that at this time, we could not drop the state assessment system, which is approved, and go to a different testing system, like ACP, for instance, without having to go through the validation again with NCAB, which might take some time. Which means that probably at this time, you're looking at continuing your state assessment as the one which is approved by NCLB and serves a very useful purpose, and then considering other tests only as an addition. And this is really, I think, the most important thing maybe in my testimony, is that we have one district, this in Beaverton, 37,000 students, third largest district in the state, who last year took the initiative of giving ACT offers a variety of tests. We're very familiar with the college prep test, which is done for juniors and seniors, but they also have what they call the Explore test, which is designed for 8th and 9th graders, and the Plan test, which is designed for sophomores. And then the regular ACT test for college is 11th, 10th, 12th grade. So Beaverton last year decided to test all of their high school students, which is close to 10,000, you know, on all three, on the appropriate test. I have a grandson who was a freshman, and he took the Explore test. And sophomores would take the Plan test and the others. And, of course, they have the results of this. And this year, they're repeating this, except they're testing the 8th graders as well. And the reasons for this are the following, that when you have one of the weaknesses of the state assessment test, we only have one test at the 10th grade. And so this is the only snapshot that we have, you know, in the whole 4 years of high school. In fact, we know that close to 50% of the students don't meet the standards on the 10th grade test. And yet, 80% of those who did not meet the standard in the 10th grade get diplomas 2 years later without any idea or any evidence that they have learned anything between the 10th grade and the 12th grade, which of course is a reflection on the validity of the diploma. But so with the Beaverton, what they found is that now they have tests at the this year at the 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th grade. And with those tests, they serve three purposes at least. One is that the students take the test very seriously because they know ACT means something. If they can give an ACT test score when they apply for college at Dartmouth or in Florida or wherever, you know, that's universally recognized. Also, it's a norm. It is a criterion reference test because any test is by definition. If you resolve the problem of alignment of the test, and ACT assures us that they are willing and they have been successful in other states in providing almost complete alignment between their test and the content standards, local content standards. So this is a concern, but it doesn't seem to be a very great concern. The other thing which is very important is that when you test kids in the 8th and 9th grade, then because it's norm reference test, those kids have a better feel of how they stack up, you know, in the nation. And the interesting results in Beaverton is that they found that all of their students, on average, test higher than the national average on the ACT test. And this has done wonders for the district, of course, and for the teachers, they're pleased to see that, but also for the students. And they pointed out that a lot of students entered high school in the 9th grade really not thinking that they were college material. that they would not be able to succeed, and they found that the test, which was mandatory, therefore they all took it. Well, it was not mandatory, but they said they had the best attendance of the year on the day of the test, which means that the students did take the test. And so those students realized, hey, I'm not so dumb. You know, maybe I can succeed. And also, you can use the test in the ninth grade or even in the eighth grade now to help the student structure his plan for his high school education. What courses do I want? What do I think I want to do afterwards? And so I think the great advantage of those tests is that they're more motivating for the students. The students take them more seriously. They are very satisfying to teachers because they see their kids are really performing well compared to the nation. And also, they help the students with the counselors and the teachers determine the best path for them to take in high school to prepare for post-secondary education. And so these are enormous advantages that can only be done with this test, not with a single test, you know, at the 10th grade, which is a test assessment, the only one that NCLB currently recognizes. So I would see that the great opportunity for the benefit of all students is to continue with our state assessment system. We have to, because that's the only one that's available, acceptable to NCLB. But at the same time, to encourage every district and maybe even make it mandatory that they take the sequence of ACT tests for all of their high school students, because it informs education, it motivates students, and it improves their success in high school. So I think it's very important. Now, Beaverton was the first one to do it last year. This year, Hillsborough, Forest Grove, Tigard, Tualatin, and perhaps some other districts are doing it this year. And I'm doing my best to get our district to do it next year. And I suspect there will be a lot of districts that will do it next year. And one question is the cost. And if you look at the numbers from Washington, Hillsborough, it's about $20 a student. So it's not an outrageous number. So this is what I would like to say. You know, I feel those tests are a great opportunity as an addition or an enhancement of our current state test system. And it may be that after a couple of years, we can resolve the matter with NCLB and decide, well, those tests are so good and so useful that maybe we don't need to maintain a state assessment system. However, the other problem that you have in the bill, as I read it, is that it says, let's see, the Department of Education shall develop the statewide assessment system in mathematics, science, English, history, geography, economics, and civics. And now we're not only going to the standard things that are tested by NCLB or by ACT or by the state assessments, but we're adding four different subjects, you know. And so then that's a big question. And certainly the state assessment would have to be expanded considerably and a great deal of effort to cover those other subjects. And the ACT and SAT would probably tell us to search elsewhere because they are not prepared, you know, to expand their test the same
way. That was already in there.
So,
yeah.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Representative Dolan.
Hey, Beaverton is presently pursuing both lines of testing.
Yes.
I probably should ask Superintendent Colonna what he would do, but do you have any feel for what Beaverton would do if they could take only one test?
Well, I think with NCLB, they don't have any choice. They have to take this.
Where I'm going with this, and again,
that's accepted.
Where I'm going with this is, I did ask the other two agencies, and I'm not sure that we should delimit the area to two, but that's where we are right now, if they could meet the requirements of NCLB. Now, there's a long step between them meeting those requirements and those requirements being verified. But if we could roll all of these requirements into one, I guess we will have to ask the superintendent, or I will have to ask him, which would he prefer if we could reach NCLB?
Oh, okay. Well, I see Jerry Colonna probably once a month at various meetings, and I've heard him testify on this. I know he's absolutely enthusiastic, and so is the entire teacher corps and administrators in the Beaverton District. They're absolutely enthusiastic about the ACT and what it has done to enhance the self-image of students as well as the quality of education in their high school. So there's no question that he's redoing this year is going to do it forever. And I think the other preliminary districts like Hillsborough, Tiger Tualatin, or Forest Grove, who are all very high-achieving districts, were equally positive on the ACT test. And so I'm sure that there's no question to me that would be a perfectly good test. But the thing is, and actually the ACT in their presentation at the State Board indicated that they were approved by NCLB in the various states, Colorado, Michigan, so it's probably a feasible thing to do. However, as I'm sure Doug knows very well, whenever you comply with a requirement of NCLB, you have to produce validation and documentation, which means years of work by people in the department.
That's true. Other questions?
Yes. I have a question, and thank you for your testimony. And actually, this may be best answered by Mr. Costi, but it just came to mind, and you may know the answer, and I think he's still here. And that is whether the department is working on expanding its high school testing, or is it waiting for legislature or NCLB to require that so that instead of just 10th grade, we have some sort of additional...
Okay. I think I could... I'll just give you one historical note on this, because, again, I've been associated with this for a long, long time. As you know, when we developed assessments following the Oregon Education Act, then it was initially in math, and in language arts. And then we've added science, we added writing, we added problem solving in math. And it was thought until the 2003 or the 2005 legislature that we would continue to expand. In fact, the next plan was to have a state assessment for social studies. It turns out, you know, when you're in math, it's very easy to design a test. Because in math, they're not approximate answers. They're good answers and wrong answers. You know, when you get into social sciences, even history and other things, then that becomes much more difficult. And so there would be much more difficult to develop assessments in those subjects than it would be in an exact science like mathematics. Also, at the same time, the Oregon Education Act and Siemens-Cam were under some pressure from some people in the legislature who thought we'd gone too far in that direction and wanted to see something else. And at the same time, we had NCLB as an overlapping requirement, and the NCLB specified math and language arts, and I think science is also coming into NCLB. And so at that time, we decided, let's not further expand, you know, the assessments to other subjects. Let's just concentrate on the three that are required by NCLB, because we have no choice on these anyway. I think that's for in math and in language arts. And then we've added science, we added writing, we added problem solving in math. And it was thought until the 2003 or the 2005 legislature that we would continue to expand. In fact, the next plan was to have a state assessment for social studies. It turns out, you know, when you're in math, it's very easy to design a test. Because in math, they're not approximate answers. They're good answers and wrong answers. You know, when you get into social sciences, even history and other things, then that becomes much more difficult. And so there would be much more difficult to develop assessments in those subjects than it would be in an exact science like mathematics. Also, at the same time, the Oregon Education Act and Siemens-Cam were under some pressure from some people in the legislature who thought we'd gone too far in that direction and wanted to see something else. And at the same time, we had NCLB as an overlapping requirement, and the NCLB specified math and language arts, and I think science is also coming into NCLB. And so at that time, we decided, let's not further expand, you know, the assessments to other subjects. Let's just concentrate on the three that are required by NCLB, because we have no choice on these anyway. I think that's probably a fair answer. Doug?
Yeah.
And there is an enormous amount of work in developing those assessments.
Thank you. Thank you, Francis. Vice Chair Roblin, members of the committee, again for your record, Doug Costi, Department of Education, Representative Cannon. In terms of what we're doing, we have more than we can handle on our plate right now. We're staying focused on 3 through 8. But I would add, in addition to what Mr. Charbonnet said, is that we don't stop testing necessarily at 10th grade. And if kids want to take the 10th grade assessment, they're more than welcome to take that beyond the 10th grade, writing included.
Yeah. The problem is not enough of them do.
Right.
Representative Roblin?
Thank you. And the 10th grade standards are the standards we have set as being the meeting the standards for your high school. So repeating them isn't saying that they're taking a lower test or whatever. They're trying to show that they are meeting or exceeding those the state standards we have set for all students.
Chair Kopp, Vice Chair Roblin, that is exactly correct.
Any other questions for the people at the testimony table? Representative Buckley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Gentlemen, thank you. Thank you for coming forward to offer that perspective. All of a sudden, it's starting to kind of click in a really interesting way. It'd be very interesting to see the success of Beaverton over a couple years.
I think it's impressive.
And Representative Dahlman, I mean, this might be in more form of discussion, but with the state assessment programs that we have to the work that's been done by the department and the ability to add some of the ACT, does this get somewhere to where you're looking to get towards to satisfy the needs?
Well, if it were an ideal world, the gears don't mesh. And so Beaverton is forced to, if they want to get where they want to go, they have to use both batteries of tests. Mm-hmm. And in talking to the SAT people and the ACT people and Doug to some extent, if we could bring that in line, because the state assessment does some great things, but when our kids go off to college, it doesn't help them, even in our own schools. So, and a few other places. And I don't want to get into the negatives. I will tell you that the gears don't mesh. So what we put our, and when you look at this from the student's perspective, and not the Department of Ed, or not the legislature, or not the principal, or the. But when you look at it, they become, my term, test brittle. In fact, during the state assessment, our concern when that test was issued was, we had people in the room that were, you'll be there, and you will take this test. And so their performance on the test was less than they could have done. But the stakes are huge,
right,
on test performance. They're huge. I had staff members in tears. So you have a test system that, is there a way that we could that we could make everybody or make the system not only viable but more valid? Mm-hmm. If we could guarantee, and the ACT and the SAT people have told us they can meet the Nickel B requirements, that would put us down to one test, or if the state could get an acceptance from at least the universities in our own state to accept their results, I think we could, from the student's point of view, take them out of one of these batteries and make it a much more viable testing experience. So do we get there? I think Beaverton is going to lead the way. I think, but I would like to give other districts an opportunity to spend some state money and use one system.
And just to clarify,
okay, go ahead.
Chris, with Beaverton, just so if you know this answer, the students didn't pay for the ACT, correct?
No, they were paid by the district.
Okay.
And again, the number for Beaverton was about 176,000, and they have close to 10,000 people in high school, and Hillsborough, I think, ordered 70,000, and they have maybe 6,000 students. So it's similar. You know, it's in the range of $10 to $20. One thing is, you know, the SAT, the traditional SAT test is taken on a Saturday,
right,
I think, and the Beaverton ACT tests were all done on a work day.
Okay.
on school day. Mm-hmm. And that was attractive to the students and to the teachers. And again, they had they said that they had the highest attendance, something like 98%.
That's amazing.
On the day of that test, which is that not many students chose to stay away. And again, at the moment, I see that mostly as an additional way of really motivating students, giving them a better sense of where they stack up, and also to improve inform instruction so that their path through high school can be better guided and more successful. I think that's really the advantage, and only you can only do this if you take this test the kids early enough, which is now the reason why Beaverton decided this year we're going to test the 8th graders as well, because we want that test for them before they enter high school, so that they already know what they're going to do, rather than wait for the 9th grade.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
Mr. Kosky, follow-up?
Chair Cobb, members of the committee, with your permission, I would like to ask Mark Hensley from the University Chancellor's Office to come up and explain maybe briefly what the first-year study results were in terms of the predicted value of the Oregon State Assessment.
Thank you. Okay. Mr. Hensley, since I didn't get your name down here, could you, when you state your name for the record, could you help me spell it?
Certainly.
Thank you.
Chair Kopp, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Mark Hensley, spelled E-N-D-S-L-E-Y.
I would have never gotten it right.
I'm the director of K-16-01 for the Chancellor's Office, and I was, for 13 years, prior to that, a middle and high school science teacher, and I've worked in the system for a long time in assessment, particularly for the proficiency-based admission standard system in the Chancellor's Office, PASS for short. In the years 2000 and 2001, we conducted a study in collaboration with the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development and with the Department of Education to evaluate the relationship between our statewide assessment system and the standards measured there, and then subsequent college performance. And so what I hope I can do is keep it short, but clarify some of the roles of the assessment, both the statewide and the other exams that you're talking about in terms of the college position. And I should start by saying that the university system doesn't necessarily take a position as neutral to the decision you're making now. So I'm providing information, I hope, just to assist with that decision, not point you in any particular direction. What we did find through the first-year study is that there was a very strong relationship between performance on the statewide assessment, and that was predominantly by 10th graders, and their subsequent performance in college. There was an extremely strong correlation, and it was very predictive of their performance later on. In fact, students that met or exceeded the standard on the various assessments, especially in combination when we looked at them, were much more likely to succeed and have higher GPAs subsequently, both within courses that were connected, but also overall. In terms of the relationship with the other national assessments, we also found that there was a very strong predictive relationship between passing those 10th grade assessments and doing well on, or not well, depending on where you were, on either the SAT or ACT exams. And so, consequently, there was across the board, a pretty strong relationship for your performance as a student. They were pretty well connected. I should also clarify that the purpose of the requirement for the SAT or ACT exams in Oregon currently in the university system has less to do with sort of a barrier for students. The score is not used predominantly for college admission. So the requirement is that I take the assessment, submit a score, but it is not necessarily required that I get any particular score in OUS in order to be admitted. Now, with that said, why do we ask them to take it? A couple of purposes. First off, for comparisons with cross-state peers, it's very useful for us to have a national measure in order to compare sort of apples to apples in terms of student performance and evaluate our programs relative to those peers. So it gives us some data in order to evaluate our own internal programs. So that's one purpose. The second is that there are a number of students that are in competitive decision-making situations, like scholarship competitions or honors college decisions and other sorts of things in the university where they are, in fact, in a more limited competitive environment. And all of that data then can be combined in order to, usually through a formula, calculate sort of a ranking of students in order to, you know, to figure out where we would allow one student in or not, or award one student or not. And so all of those scores are sort of included in those formulas. Now, let me circle back to the state assessment system. Because of the past relationships and the alignment that we did with the Department of Education, all of those state assessment scores are currently, for the majority of our universities, also included as a factor in those kinds of decisions right now. So the difficulty is that it's not widely publicized, partly because we could not, up until probably a year from now, require that those scores were submitted on a large scale. It was all a paper and pencil process. We didn't have a way to get them. So it was used when it was available, but not widely used because of the limited availability of the data.
Can I stop you there? So currently, that's what I want to know, are the test scores from 10th grade, 11th, or 12th, whenever students are completing their last assessment, are they on their transcript, or how are you getting that comparative information?
Well, in the past, there's been a paper process that schools could opt to submit, but that was pretty burdensome and,
right.
and frankly, not widely used for obvious reasons.
Right.
As part of the integrated data transfer system that's been funded by the legislature, we hope to be able to be more inclusive about that data from the majority of high school students in the state. So that will be automatically included on the transcripts when it's available in the student information system at the high school. And for many of them, that will turn out to be true over the next probably year to 3 years, I would say, as both the IDTS system moves forward and the KIDS system that the Department of Education is funding or is developing.
Tell me what those acronyms are and then why such a range of time?
Chair Kopp, the range of time is because of the complexity of developing the electronic systems, and the acronyms stand for Integrated Data Transfer System, and that is the ability for us to send an electronic transcript from a high school directly to a college.
Okay.
The KIDS system, the K-16 Integrated Data System, is the K-12 equivalent of being able to exchange data back and forth amongst high schools and with the Department of Education. So it is both of the system, in essence, allow us to move from a system where we kept locally electronic data but then printed it and sent it off in the mail to other entities. It allows us to then just exchange it more simply and easily back and forth across sector.
Could we get a copy of your implementation plan for those two data systems?
I can't speak for the Department of Education, but we certainly have the plans that have been submitted already to the legislative bodies, and so it shouldn't be a problem for us to be able to provide those.
I see Doug's giving us a thumbs up, because many of us are in dialogue about the governor's vision of a 40-40-20, what does that aligned system look like? And in order to do that, these data systems are a key component in that. And I'm not going to say many of us. I tend to jump ahead to something that's impossible to reach because the data systems aren't there yet. It's things that we'd all like to have, but it's not logistically possible.
And Chair Kopp, I would agree. I think we share that vision, many of us in education that are working
right.
on these things. But they are time-consuming, and because of the complexity, both just of the numbers of people that are involved as well as the technology, it is time-consuming to complete what I think many of us share as a vision for where we can go with our information.
Okay, so now you just stepped into a big puddle. is the complexity funding for a data system or the time to get the people at the table to reach agreement?
Chair Kopp, I think both of those things are true. The expense of doing the programming and bringing folks together in order to develop what amounts to multiple systems all over the state, and then integrating that into sort of single packages, doing all the translations and the necessary technology components, it is expensive to do computer programming.
Right.
They make significant money, and so there is an element of the resource to that, but also the time to just work together around collaboration and coordination in frankly a setting where we have been in silos for so long, and we have ways to communicate and work together that are but they are cumbersome, and so it is time consuming for us even just to get the agreements in place in order to take the steps necessary to do what we're trying to accomplish.
Thank you. Representative Roblin.
Yeah, and there's another part to that too, and I think that is that as they've done this, security is really important. I mean, these are records about people's lives, and
right.
I, for one, had a very difficult time as a high school principal even wanting to deal with that, because I felt there was a trust that those students at that school had done the work they did. They had a transcript. The parents and them knew that transcript existed there, and they didn't really want to believe that transcript existed everywhere for the rest of their lives.
Mm.
There was a time when we had control of that information, and the people have been exceptionally good at building in security so that isn't just out there, because I am one of those people who believes that the security of my information should be mine and not necessarily shared everywhere unless I choose to let it be shared. And I was very concerned at the beginning of the process personally that information was going to be too easy to access one place to another. And I, And they have been very good about that, and I have been very cautious myself with respect to doing it. That's all.
Thank you. Representative Wisnik?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Your comments and your position at higher ed, I think one of the goals we're all trying to achieve and concerned about is the low rate of students that we have going to higher ed in this state. And based upon Francis's testimony about the Beaverton system, it seems that they're helping achieve or strive towards that goal. And I'm really concerned if you know, we've got a system, third largest school district in the state is using this and it's working. Why are we wanting to delay? Because the Department of Education is already saying it's going to take some time to do this, but the bill says you may implement it, and it has to be approved by No Child Left Behind. So why is there any, to me, we want to get you more students there, and success as the governor does and everyone else. Why, you know, would you not encourage us to press on with this?
Chair Kampf, Representative Wisnik, I think I can agree with you that the goal for the state is to encourage students to pursue post-secondary education at much higher rates. And certainly I think Beaverton's experience is that using the ACT as a familiar measure that's used in a widespread way across the country has been an avenue for them to promote that notion among students. I think that's absolutely true. I also think that it is true that our statewide assessment system has the ability for us to provide information at a very even earlier stage for students around advising and helping students understand that they are on track. It has not been used in that way for the most part, but we have data that suggests that it could well be, you know, in terms of whether we should or should not allow the ACT to count and deal with the other, you know, compete with our statewide assessment or be used in lieu or in addition or instead of. I don't think OUS has a formal opinion to that, and I don't as an individual either. I think assessment options are something that are certainly our admissions folks have promoted. It is, in fact, in the sort of a recommendation in our admission policy that's being adopted. We assume will be adopted tomorrow at the State Board of Higher Ed meeting. We do make a formal statement that that allowing students multiple options for assessment is desirable because our unit of analysis is that student. And for us, whichever kinds of information we can gather to demonstrate the proficiency and skill necessary to succeed in college is what we want access to or what we want to value for students. And that doesn't preclude probably any of the assessments that we're talking about right now. I think the question that Mr. Costi is having to wrestle with is a different one that has to do with school accountability and federal requirements. That's a different question.
Go ahead, Representative Dahl, and then I just have one quick follow-up, too.
Right now, Representative Roble and I, and I think Representative Kampf, have heard numbers. I believe about 25% of our college students go on to college, and our high school students go on to college. How many of them go into our university system? And if I were to ask the question of your colleague in Washington, Idaho, or Oregon, would they use our state assessment information?
Chair Kampf, Representative Dahlem, multiple questions there. I'll try to keep track of
three for sure. But I only get one crack at the apple here.
So please remind me if I forget an element of it. First off, in terms of other states, I think our statewide assessment has utility and is well understood by our own universities, or increasingly by our own university faculty. But other systems and states have developed their own separate assessment systems. Washington has worked, I know, with their higher ed system to look extensively at the WASL. They've done formal studies of the relationship there, just as I was suggesting we had done. And so they're looking at ways to include their statewide assessment as a component of you know, sort of their college going and the components of advising and placement, some of the other issues that we're trying to address. So that's the first thing. So remind me a couple of the other elements. We've got the out-of-state stuff and those assessments.
And then we have about 25% of our students
numbers, that's right,
go on to university. What percent go to the Oregon University system?
Actually, the numbers, we do at OUS a formal study that's the post-high school plan survey originally, and then we also do a follow-up survey that follows students out, where have Oregon's graduates gone. The most recent study of that actually showed that when a student graduates from high school, if they actually get a diploma, their likelihood of pursuing post-secondary education within 6 months is actually much higher than is often recorded. Most recently, 73% of the students from Oregon high schools who earned a diploma entered college either private, public, four-year, or a community college within 6 months of graduation. Now, the success rates of those are a different question, but almost all of our graduates go to college pretty soon after they graduate from high school. About 40% of those graduates end up in the Oregon University system, and those numbers have been relatively stable for a number of years through the survey. This last year, there was a slight drop-off. I said 73%. The 2 years prior to that, we were at 75%, and there are probably a number of factors that caused that decrease, but it was the first decline in over a decade in the attendance rate for graduating high school seniors. Community colleges also get another roughly 40% of the students that college attending population, and then the remaining students are attending either in-state privates, other sort of post-secondary technical institutes, or out-of-state schools, which are roughly 10% of that population. So they're really when the State Board of Education was pursuing a notion that all students should be career and college ready, there's a reason for that. Our students are going on, whether we are aware of that and prepared for that or have prepared them for that or not. And so our ability then to accurately sort of recognize what they're capable of doing and how well prepared they are and route them into the programs that are available to them to support them when they move on is, I think, an important factor in all this as well.
Thank you. That number was astounding to me. That's not the number we've been hearing, and I thank you for that.
Representative Roblin?
And interestingly enough, if you go with that and you look at that 75% and those numbers, that means that of that 100 kids, right now we have 30 of that 100 going to OUS, 30 of them going to community colleges, 15 of them going, and then that other group of 15 not going anywhere, or 25. So 25. So.
Thank you.
That's pretty good. That's better than I thought we were with it. If we can get them through.
That's the key. One clarifying question. We talked earlier about cut scores. Is you're saying you're looking at the SAT scores and that as, you know, a component of admission to college. Is there a cut score for our state assessment that is a target that students know that if you get this kind of cut score, this is going to give you a thumbs up for college?
Chair Comp, that's a factor in our first year study. We looked at the student performance in multiple ways. One of the directions we looked was just to divide them up based on overall performance and sort of slice them up into essentially quintiles without any preconceived notion of a cut score. We found, again, we've got the relationships there. You know, we see that the better you do, in essence.
Right.
But then we did, in fact, look at the state's current cut scores to evaluate whether those cut scores were predictive of college performance. And while we haven't established a single cut score that we say, oh, well, you must have this in order
right.
to be prepared.
But or a range.
What we found is that students that were at the meets level averaged about a 2.5 overall GPA. By the time you got down into the population that had not met, you were down close to academic probation, down around 2.1, 2.2. And when you figure that represents really a spread, you've got a number of students that are already well underneath their ability to continue on, at least if they sustain that performance. They're not going to make it.
Okay, but so highlight this a step farther. I know what 232 means for eighth grade. That, you know, I know that they've met or they're exceeded the standard. How do parents know what the number is? What is the marketing behind that? What is the support system so that if your child is at a 118 instead of a 250, I know that's a real hard thing for some parents to look at. But when the gap's that big, it also, I mean, yeah, so, yeah, I'm just trying to look at it from the parents' perspective. You know, when my daughters were graduating, well, I knew what their GPA was supposed to mean. I didn't know what it meant because that was pre all this assessment. But I sure knew what their SAT scores meant. And that same thing, if we're going to be using this as one of the components for admissions, you know, it'd be nice to know what is that score so that we know, so that parents know what we're shooting for.
Chair Knopp, I think that's part of a larger conversation that we're conducting in terms of the alignment in the whole system. And part of, I think, what the Joint Boards of Education are wrestling with now, along with the various sector agencies, is really thinking about how we do a better job of promoting these notions and the integration of the systems. We didn't do a good job of that in the first rounds of things, and it's probably not widespread knowledge, even within high schools,
right,
that there is a relationship or that colleges care about whether students met those standards or not. And so as part of a sort of larger picture of how we implement, we've got to make that knowledge more widely available, and it has to be available in, I think, a fashion that doesn't require people to go search it out on their own.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay, thank you. I appreciate your input. I don't know that we've, you know, have we gone the full breadth of this topic? Or
we did talk about SAT several times, and I had a visit with Matt Marquis, and he dug out some information, and I'm not sure that Matt's had an opportunity or I've had an opportunity to share that information. Would you ask Matt to the stand? I'd like to grill him.
Mr. Matt Marquis, are you available for a couple of short questions? Did you get that, Mr. Representative Gollum?
Thank you.
Okay.
Here comes one of them 9-in-1 questions.
I said short questions.
Matt, you were talking to me about some experience that the state of Maine had had. Would you share that information with the panel, please?
And your name for the record.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Matt Marquis, representing the College Board today. Representative Dolan, in response to your question, the state of Maine, as they set their plan to the federal government for their No Child Left Behind, to get approved for that, one piece of their plan was to use the SAT in the 11th grade, not only for No Child Left Behind, but the plan consists of using the SAT to test for their state standards for the No Child Left Behind requirement, and it also works as an exit exam all at the same time. Because the SAT or any nationally normed test isn't set up to do to state standards, that test is then augmented, and the College Board developed a series of questions in math, for instance, that will be in addition to the regular SAT questions to meet the state standards for the state of Maine in math. Now, science is not part of their plan at this point. It probably will be in the future, and the College Board is also in the process of developing a science test for that assessment, aside to that. Now, beyond Maine, there are several states that have gone down the avenue of running both a state assessment and a nationally normed test together for a lot of the same reasons that you've heard earlier today, looking to identify kids for more rigor, for AP potential reasons, and to show that kids are college-bound. In fact, and also, you heard a lot about Beaverton here today. There are several districts in Oregon that have chose ACT, but there's also a lot that have chosen the College Board products, and Centennial and Redmond and Hermiston all use the PSAT or other versions of College Board products to show more rigor available to their students.
Thank you. I guess my point is that there are places, and some in our own state, that have been able to mesh those gears more closely. And that's the point that I want to make. And I want to look at this from the desk with the student in it, with his watch that'll give him the answer or that won't give him the answer, and make it easier for that person. Thank you, Matt.
Mm-hmm. Representative Minnis.
Thank you. Matt, could you just outline for me, who's relatively new to this subject matter, what the difference is in your opinion? Now, you're not here I don't want you to just talk about how great your client is, but if you're looking at the tests side by side, in your estimation, what do they have in common and what are their differences?
This is a test.
Madam Chair, Representative Menace, when you say the two tests, what?
ACT versus PSAT.
It's a difficult question because I'm fairly new to the issue myself. We've been working with the College Board since last June, and I don't know everything that there is to know about ACT. I do know quite a bit about the College Board programs. I can tell you that a couple of the major differences, when you look at PSAT, the before test for the SAT, they do an item-by-item analysis of all the questions that they give back to teachers, and you don't find that with PLAN, which is the ACT version of the PSAT. They don't do an item-by-item analysis. They kind of give you an analysis, but it's in a general sense rather than item-by-item, each question taken. Also with the PSAT, you receive free of charge what's called MyRoad, which is available to anybody that's taken the PSAT for their whole high school career. And that also gets a lot into some very specific career development. It kind of is a Myers-Briggs type thing where it'll do some aptitude testing and things like that. The ACT version of that is totally different. It gets into, and I don't want to speak for ACT, but it's my understanding that rather than being a kind of a broad test like the Myers-Briggs type of test, it is more specific to a specific career. Like if you wanted to go into nursing, you would take a test that would show you have the ability to be a nurse. It would be a test specifically for nursing rather than here's what my ideas are. How they align to the state standards, I know that the College Board has done some very in-depth analysis of the state standards of Oregon to the SAT. I don't know that ACT has done that alignment study.
Mr. Kosky, would you know those answers?
I believe they...
You're going to need to come to the... Yeah, come forward. And your name for the record again.
Chair Kopp, Representative Menace, for your record again. My name is Doug Kosky, Department of Education. Pardon me. The first question you asked is, what are the various products side by side?
We've had them both here.
And I'm going to give you the 30,000-foot version of it so that it's, because there's a battery of other products. But essentially, as I understand it, as Dr. Charbonneau pointed out, it was the ACT is their flagship product. That's their exit or college-bound exam. Below that is a plan. That's their career planning module. And beyond or before that is the Explore, and that is the exploratory to see how kids are going and what direction they can get into. And then on the ACT or College Board, there's basically the SAT.
Madam Chair, then the PSAT, and then in the junior high level, they do what's called Springboard, which is kind of it's a whole curriculum-based approach.
But essentially, these products are focused on 8th through 12th grade. And I think both vendors have a suite that addresses that group of kids.
Well, and in addition to what Mr. Marquis is saying, the College Board works in many middle schools with a program. It's a national program called Gear Up. And when he says curriculum, they literally have a binder, and the students take classes about it. It's not a test. It's instruction, and their parents are involved in order to make sure that, yeah, it's a very comprehensive program.
Thank you.
Okay. Anything else? Representative Cannon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a follow-up to Mr. Marquis. In Redmond, Hermiston, and Centennial, I think those are the districts you mentioned using the College Board product.
There are others as well.
Okay. In those districts or others in Oregon, are they using the College Board product in the place of the state standards or to supplement? In your testimony, it sounded like you might have been saying they were doing in those districts what Maine has been able to do now under NCLB.
Madam Chair, Representative Cannon, they can't use it as a replacement test. Okay. They have to use both tests. And the other thing that I failed to mention that is another product of the College Board that would be totally different than what the ACT offers is AP. And all AP classes are done through, or the AP testing is done through the College Board, and that's one of the big things that the PSAT uses, or it helps identify kids for AP classes.
I'm saving a question. You gave me three, and I only used one.
Representative Dolan, you have 30 seconds. And Representative Roblin, we're going to close this up.
Now, we know that Beaverton chose the ACT. Do you know why Hermiston chose SAT?
Madam Chair, Representative Dolan, I don't know why Hermiston went the direction that they went, except I know...
Let me offer an answer.
Hermiston is using Springboard, which is a very curriculum-based for their high level.
Representative Dahlem, it's not fair if you already know the answer.
I try not to ask questions I don't know the answer to. But could it be that they examined both of these and determined that the SAT was best for them? And that's the point of this legislation, is to offer a district a choice to serve their students. And that's my point exactly. And I was going to ask you how they came at this. They examined everything, and this was the product they chose.
Representative Roblin.
Thank you. You know, from a high school perspective, it used to be the West was SAT and the East was ACT. I mean, that was kind of how it was. And those things have kind of merged a little bit. And one of the things that's interesting, and I have always liked the College Board, the AP exams and so on, but we have been successful at the high school I was principal at. We had two students over the years who were College Board Advisory Board members, and they flew them out. And I think that's another unique thing that the College Board has done all along, and that is have representative students starting in like the freshman year of high school or a little later sophomore, four-year term, fly them back to New York, have them go through the materials, get to know the stuff, and come back and be a part of that. And a couple of our students, actually the first year of college, they were still on that board and brought stuff back to the schools so you knew what was going on in the SAT. And I thought that was an impressive thing, a consistent attempt by College Board to continue to have opportunities for kids to do stuff.
Madam Chair, Representative Roblin, as I mentioned, this is a fairly new client for us, and every day I learn something new about them, and they really seem to take a lot of pride in the development of all of their products, and they really do look for what's best for the student and how to create more rigorous opportunities for every student involved.
Okay. Thanks, Matt.
Thank you.
We'll let you off the hot seat. I want to just say thank you, Representative Roblin, Representative Dahlem, for writing this bill. We heard a lot of testimony today. Dahlem, Roblin.
The committee.
The committee bill?
Committee bill. Yeah.
Okay.
I'd be glad to take the credit. You'll read that in the paper tomorrow, Chair Cobb.
Even though I was absent part of the discussion, I think it's pretty clear to that everybody in the room and anybody that's watching this is heavy stuff. It's not easy to, you know, find your pathway through it, but a tremendous amount of organizations have been working hard together. I hope this communication today has been helpful for understanding of how we're all trying to work together for student achievement. And it's not easy. If there was one set of answers, as many of us know, well, it would have been answered a long time ago. And so with that, I'm going to, and please, committee members, if you have other thoughts about if we need to proceed on this, please let me know. But I am going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2048.
Madam Chair, before we adjourn, I just had a process complaint. While you were gone, Representative Roblin was so abusive with the gavel that Representative Wisnett didn't even speak the entire time you were gone. I just want to make clear that's on the record, just so you know.
Okay. Well, I'm sorry I missed it. Representative
Chair Comp, in your absence, Representative Wick tore my coat sleeve off.
Representative Dahl, would you file a complaint? This meeting is adjourned.